Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
The program, Matt Shively from ABC's The Real Neil. Matt, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, Matt, I tell you, I've really enjoyed this show so far. We'll definitely talk about this. But how did you become an actor? How did that start out? Tell us the story.
I did a play in fourth grade, and from the moment I did that play, I realized that I just wanted to entertain for the rest of my life. I know I was super young, and that's a pretty ridiculous thing to choose at such a young age, but from that point forward, I loved acting, and I loved being on stage, and I did a lot more stage than I did anything else beforehand, so it was more about stage at that time, but it's just been my passion since that day on.
So what made you so interested once you got on stage? What made it so interesting to you? What did you enjoy about it at such a young age, seventh grade and stuff?
I think the thing that really drew me to it was that, you know, you make a joke or, you know, you do a dramatic scene and you, especially on stage, you can look out and you just see the emotion that you're bringing out of other people. And when I would watch, you know, shows on television or stage shows, I always wanted to make people feel the way that I was feeling. And I knew when I was up on stage or when, you know, I was behind the camera and people were watching that's what I was doing. And that's what I loved about it.
Interesting. And so at that age you were doing that. Were you into sports at that age as well, would you say? Or was it more, this is what you like?
Not really. I didn't really have any hobbies at the time. And that was why I kind of had time to go and do a play. I tried hockey and stuff, but I was always very, very tiny.
So, Matt, you weren't that big in fourth grade, so you grew. That's interesting. That's interesting story.
No, the sad thing is I wasn't big in fourth grade. I also wasn't big in 10th or 11th or 12th grade either. It took me I was a very late bloomer. It took a very long time for me to catch up with my legs.
Interesting. Okay. So you got the acting bug in fourth grade. When did you decide to start acting professionally? How old were you?
Well, I wanted to do it then, but my mother would not allow me to because she was afraid of all of the rejection and everything that came with the business. So I pried and pried and pried, and finally in the seventh grade, she decided that she would allow me to finally, you know, test the waters and see if I could do it at all. And we went to John Robert Powers, and I took a couple classes, which led to my first agent and so forth.
But you're still there? I couldn't hear you, Matt. Completely didn't hear you. So we're talking about agent stuff. Okay.
It blacked out.
Okay. All right. So you did that. So what was your first big gig? What would you say your first big gig was?
Well, I'd say my first big gig was True Jackson BP on Nickelodeon, but I did little things. I did like an episode of Zoe 101 on Nickelodeon when I was like 15, and I did small things like that, but it was Nickelodeon that really did it.
So once you did, what was your character on True Jackson on Nickelodeon?
I played, I was with Kiki Palmer, and I played her best friend. My name was Ryan Laserbeam, and I was kind of the doofus of the group. Kind of almost similar to my character on The Real O'Neills. I played kind of the kid who really messes up all the plans, and I slipped on a lot of banana peels and small monster truck toys.
Gotcha. So, and from that point on, after you did that, so you were working other acting before that. Did you just move to L.A. or were you already located in L.A. when you made that decision?
No, I'm from Covina, which is about 30 minutes east of L.A. And I moved out. I was fortunate enough to book that job a couple months before I was 18, and they ended up picking up the show. And I ended up moving out on my 18th birthday into the heart of Hollywood, which was probably, looking back at it now that I'm 25, not the greatest idea, because it was more of just like the actor's dream of like, oh, I'm 18 now, I want to, you know, move out and I want to be on my own and stuff.
Right.
People don't tell you how much being an adult is a little more difficult than it looks.
Exactly. And so from that point on, you were a True Jack for how many years, and then what was your next big gig after that?
We did that for 2.5 years, I think maybe almost 3 years. And then we went from that I did another Nickelodeon show for a couple months up in Vancouver. But the next, like, big thing that I did Paranormal Activity 4.
Okay, okay, cool. So you got to the, you ended up in the, on the big screen. And what did you think of that? The different experience of doing the big screen compared to television.
That was a crazy experience because it was actually because, you know, it's a low-budget film. And, you know, they didn't really have a script. They kind of just had outlines of what they wanted to try and do. So what was crazy about that is that, you know, everything we shot was improv'd and kind of shot and then reshot. And pretty much everything you see in the movie is like the last 2 weeks that we shot before it came out. And so it was a really wild and crazy experience. And there's so many people involved and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool, though, to see it all come together.
It seems like it would be for sure. And what, doing all of that, who did you learn from acting in a film? Who, what type of mentors helped you in that difference compared to being on TV, especially a kids show? To this kind of thing.
I've always been a Judd Apatow fan, and then pretty much everybody who's been in that Apatow family of, like, you know, Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill and all that stuff. And I mean, I've seen pretty much all of their movies like 40 times a piece. And that was kind of, I kind of think I picked up a lot of, like, my improv skills from that, was just kind of being quick and thinking on your feet and not thinking too much about what you're going to say and just kind of letting it out. And then as far as kind of, like, you know, the drama and stuff, all of that, I was a huge fan of Shia LaBeouf, and I've always been a fan of him, and I've watched a lot. And he was really the main reason that I was, like, kind of wanting to, that was one of my biggest things to get into the entertainment. I wanted to do what he did. And so I've seen everything he's done a billion times and kind of learned from him.
That's really cool. Then after that experience, so what age were you when you did that film?
I think I was 20 years old when I did that movie. I might have been 21. Gosh, it's been so long. Now that I think about it, it's been so long since I've done that.
Exactly. And so let's get – so any other before The Real O'Neills, you did some other stuff that was just like minor roles, right? Working actor roles, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I did a couple, you know, independent films that, you know, really didn't go anywhere, but, you know, I enjoyed them. And then I did, you know, I did a few things on CSI, and I did a really cool role on Teen Wolf and Last Man Standing and all that kind of stuff. I ended up doing a lot of guest star roles in between this time.
And what'd you think of that? Getting to learn from some of these actors, to be on set with these talented people and all that stuff, and really soak it in.
I think where I learned the most is because, you know, you go from doing a multi-cam show to, you know, a single cam comedy to a single cam drama, and there's so many different things that you're hitting, every crew, every actor is different. And so to be able to kind of linger around from week to week to different places to see how each person acts and each person reacts and, you know, how giving people are and how, you know, how stressed people can get and how crazy it all can get when you're, you know, on the clock and you're trying to get things done. I think that was the really cool thing, to be able to kind of soak in every different environment before doing anything else, because then once I got to The Real O'Neills, I knew exactly how everything was going to go and how everybody was going to be reacting to things, and I knew how to react to other people, and it just made it a lot easier.
Great experience. And I can tell you, you're definitely a student of this game. You're not, you know, just going in there just a pretty face. You're saying to yourself, I got to learn this stuff. I want to learn not just the role of acting. I want to know what the producer's doing, the director's doing, the rest of the cast, because I think that your acting experience on stage also helps you in that way too. So look at all those different areas to have a successful show or successful play, right? Everything has to work together simultaneously to have success.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Matt, tell us the story of how you ended up getting the gig with The Real O'Neills, and then we'll talk about that show, because it's so funny. I, at first, was a little bit like, I don't know, and then after I've been watching a few episodes, I'm like, wow, this is as funny as any of the other ones that they've been promising us of the other families that are on ABC. ABC does a great job with these stories of families, but go ahead and tell me specifically enough how that casting call come and stuff.
You know, it was funny. I got the audition, and I read it, and the way that it was described was his role is the, you know, anorexic wrestler. And me as a person, I'm very far from, you know, very skinny, and I, you know, I like my food and I eat a lot. And so I kind of at first was like, you know, the writing was great, and I, you know, believed in that, and I felt like that was going to be something that I could definitely do. But I also was like, you know, look wise, I'm not really that character. And when I got there, I walked into the waiting room, and it was, you know, a bunch of people who were just like these Adonis of men, like six packs and looking beautiful, like they were actual jocks. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to be quick and painless. And I walked in, and somehow it, you know, it went really well, and I got the call back, and I showed up, and there was still that group of guys, and I was like, okay, well, they must not know what they're looking for. And when I finally tested for it, and they called and they said that I got the role, they had told me that, you know, from the moment I walked in, I was their Jimmy. And I wish they had told me that at the very beginning, because then I wouldn't have stressed so much. But it was a really cool, you know, idea that you know, no, they had said that nobody was hitting it the way that I was hitting it. And it might be because, like, you know, that was maybe they wrote that for me and I was just meant to be this character. And you know, another thing I've realized is that anorexia is not all, you know, anorexia is not something that, you know, you don't have to be extremely skinny to be anorexic. It's anybody can be that. So it's one of those things where I was kind of just blocked on the fact that I didn't look like, you know, the pretty boy, and that's what I thought that they wanted. But it all worked out.
And that's interesting what you said about Jimmy. I think that, honestly, talking to you, you seem like your character in certain ways. That's what I'm laughing about. Just some of the that lack of confidence at times, meaning you're very humble in your acting, and, oh, yeah, I got this or that and the other. And I think you really play your character kind of like who you are. Not completely, but it's definitely Matt and Jimmy are alike in certain ways, aren't they?
Yeah, I would like to say, I think Jimmy is the most emotionally connected character in the family. I think that he gets a lot from his dad, but the one thing that I love the most about the character is the fact that, you know, most jocks that are portrayed in television or movies tend to be like the kind of mean-spirited, like, you know, non-supportive characters. And the thing that they really flipped was that, you know, he's the most supportive, and he, you know, never once is like, oh, he's gay, that's bad. It's never bad. It's perfect for him. He still loves him and he still supports him. And that's, you know, the way that I've always been. I care and love anybody in my life unless they do me wrong. And it doesn't matter what you like or what you do, I will always support you because, you know, everybody's the same. Normal isn't normal. You know, and I love that aspect of it.
And looking at the family, and we look at and I love ABC's The Goldbergs. I love Fresh Off the Boat. The shows with the families are just so funny. And Modern Family, you have characters that definitely we start to grow to love, and the story just hits you so quickly from the opening episode. But everyone has a very interesting character that's going to develop throughout the season. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the way I looked at the first season, and I think that this is why I you know, if we get a second season, I can't wait to see what we dive into, is that I saw the first season as kind of like one long movie. Whereas, like, Kenny, you know, it's very much the focus is on Kenny because, you know, the beginning of the show, it all is about him dealing with his issue or his struggle.
Right.
And so throughout the season, it's really focused on his struggle mixed with, you know, the mother Eileen's struggle of trying to accept this and not be judgmental of it, even though her belief says otherwise. And so by the end of the season, you really get a lot of closure between those two characters, which I absolutely love, which will be why I'm excited to do, you know, a second season, is because if we go and do a second season, you know, the focus will then start to be on another character and start to, you know, I think they'll go in the same direction of bringing other conflicts in rather than just focusing on this specific one and kind of make it just, it'll be one long movie each season for each, you know, character in the show.
That's interesting. And so, like, I can kind of understand specifically the characters, but I think what mom's dealing with a possible separation divorce, the perfect Catholic family, it starts out as Matt, then everything goes haywire. But yet, at the end of each show, it seems like they're back together again. And that just shows you what family's like. Everyone has their quirks. They're all different in so many ways. And yet at the end, they're back growing to love each other. And that's what I think is so special about the show in that way. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think one of my favorite things about the show that I thought they were going to change throughout the season, but I, you know, as you'll come to find out, it stays very much the same. I love the fact that the parents are getting divorced. Divorce is such a big thing, especially in kids' lives nowadays. I mean, you know, I think the statistic is like 80% of married couples get divorced, and I don't think a sitcom has ever tackled parents getting divorced and staying that way. Like, you know, I've talked to the producers and stuff. They might get back together at some point, but within this first season, it is very much the focus of a family going through divorce and them actually sticking with that. So that was the most interesting thing for me, is I don't think anybody's really seen the divorce aspect played completely through.
Blended family is such a big thing that comes through, and how couples, even though they're divorced, how they stay together and play as a team together. And the kind of funny thing where he was sleeping in the bed at first, then weren't sleeping in the basement, but they still work as a team. And that's what happens in blended families. So I guess that's a great part of this, showing that even though you are no longer together, the two characters see how important family is and family activities and family outings. And I think it also is great that you see, again, Mom's situation, what Martha plays as Mrs. O'Neill, that she's trying to have this certain perspective of what we all get afraid of when we go to church or go to mass or synagogue or wherever. What are other people thinking of us, right? That's the other thing I really gathered from that, is that how difficult moms have it, that they're so afraid. You know, you want your kids so dressed up to go to the service or wherever they're at, and the whole community's watching. How many moms, and I guess families, think about this every day?
All right, guys, we need to start wrapping this up.
Okay, great. Well, fantastic. All right, Matt, where's the best place we can find information on you and learn more about you? Where can we go?
Well, you know, you can go to my Twitter, which is MattShively1. My tag is at MattShively1. You can go to my Instagram. I post a lot on Instagram, which is at MattShively. I have a Facebook, which is Matthew Shively. I mean, that's pretty much it. Otherwise, you can go to Wikipedia and change all the information and kind of make up your own story as to who I am.
No, but guess what? Those Wikipedia people will get you. You'll try to make those changes. They're there. They're watching 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Matt.
My friends used to do that all the time. So I literally, they'd be like, you should check your Wikipedia page. And I'd go and look at it, and there'd be like four different things that are changed. So they're like, yeah, we got you. I'm like, why is that allowed to happen? You can just change it? It's crazy.
All right, Matt, thanks for calling. Best of luck. And I appreciate you coming on the show. And you have a lot of other projects too, so people have to check Matt out and check out The Real O'Neills. And remember to check out The Real O'Neills Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. Is that correct, or 8:30 p.m. Eastern Tuesday nights?
8:30.
Right after Fresh Off the Boat. So what a perfect combo. Well, thanks for calling, Matt, and best of luck, okay?
Thank you very much, man.
Take care. All right. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just...
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor. Neil has Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil. I'm excited to welcome the program from TLC's The Willis Family, Brenda Willis. Brenda, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. I love these technical difficulties to start the day, but you know how it is. It is what it is in all so many ways. Now, thinking about, I have five kids of my own. The chaos, how do you handle all this? I have to ask that question first of all. I told my wife after every child, it's there's no difference after three. What is your thought on that?
I totally agree with you. After three, you've got it handled, and it really doesn't make any difference after that. People are like, oh, my gosh, I have three kids. I just can't take it. I'm like, that's the hardest. If you get past this, you can do anything. So I totally agree with you on that one.
No, definitely. And having a big family in so many ways, it just becomes such a community togetherness that you guys share each other in so many ways. There's ups and downs, but ultimately it's all about family. And I think that that helps so that, especially with homeschooling, that, you know, you get to impart those values, your family values to them, to your children.
Yeah, that's true. And I think another really cool opportunity that we have with having this size family and the opportunity to homeschool is to find the individual blessings, the individual talents, the individual potential of each kid in the family, and go with it. And when you have a big family and you have all this individual talent, which, believe me, they are all radically different from each other. You would think that 12 kids raised in the same house together would be a little clones of each other. No, 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 not even close. They're all so different from each other. But when you put that together, it's really cool because there's all these aspects. I mean, some of my kids are really into tech, and some of them are really into writing songs, and some of them are really into dancing, and some of them are really into the instruments. And so you put it all together, and it makes this really neat, complete picture. We can accomplish a lot of awesome things together.
And you think about this, Brenda, you think about specifically how each individual is different. I think in a bigger family, you're able to understand that more because they just are such different individuals.
Definitely.
Yeah. I tell my wife that all the time.
There's enough of them that you start to see the differences.
Yeah, you do. When you have one or two, you're like, or two or three, you're like, oh, you know. But when it comes to five or your family, nine, am I correct? You have that it's just it's that type of a situation. So
actually, we have 12 kids all together.
12? Oh, my gosh. Okay, I was counting out the wrong.
Yeah.
So even more busy.
Yeah,
but
yeah, we have 12.
Wow.
So 14 people. 14 of us with all different personalities and all different talents. It's really interesting mix, but yet it really comes together as a whole, you know. And as the little ones are coming up, it's interesting to see how their personalities are developing to fit into this whole big picture.
Well, think about this. I love that you homeschool, and here's the reason why. Because I am an educational advocate, a former teacher, own a tutoring consulting company, Brenda, and I literally, the reason I love working one-on-one with kids is because you can really individualize instruction. It's missing in the school system, and so many kids have gifts and talents that you just aren't able to understand in a group teaching setting. But working one-on-one with them, explain to that such the way you're able to identify each child's strengths in school so that they can be successful, so you don't have to, you know, pigeonhole them into one-size-fits-all education.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I was an education major myself, and I graduated with, you know, a degree in secondary education, specialty fields in science and in Spanish. And I always tell people the one thing that I learned through my college years was that I didn't want to send my kids to school. Because as a student growing up, I was, you know, a good student.
Right.
I got all A's. I was a valedictorian in high school.
Okay.
And I just assumed everybody could handle that and could be that. But there's a lot of kids that actually can't because the system doesn't go the right pace or isn't designed for them or doesn't cater to their strengths or weaknesses. And so I found out through that 4 years of my education degree that the system doesn't allow each child to reach his or her potential. And so I started realizing, man, I want my kids to have the best education they can have. And maybe one or two of them will be right at the same pace as the system, but many of them may not be. And I would even go a step further.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just saying that you can give individualized education to part of their education, so they're good at math and good at reading and, you know, good at things like that and researching. They have the tools available to them. But once they get to that point, we really, really treat it more like a business. They get assignments. They work on them all week. They make reports the next week. They come back. They do their reports. And it's a really, really neat way to educate kids.
It's definitely a neat way to educate kids, and that's so, so true, Brenda, in so many ways, and I love it. Now, tell us how this whole reality thing happened. I know, again, you were a competitive family that's been on different reality shows before that. But tell us the story, how you got hooked up with your story being on reality television.
It's really a funny story that goes back to my husband being a wrestler. And I know that doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now, but he wrestled in elementary school and high school. He won the Illinois State Championship, and he got a full-ride scholarship to Northwestern. He had a bunch of brothers. They all wrestled. And we figured we'd have a bunch of boys and, you know, we would have a wrestling family. We would do music for the fun of it, you know, at church and whatever. And and that's that. And then we had 8 girls. And he's like, we're not going to have a wrestling family. It just doesn't quite fit with what I thought, you know.
Right.
And then we saw Riverdance. And we saw Riverdance, and it kind of rocked our world because it was beautiful, and the dancing was very athletic, and it was culture, and it was music. It was all this wrapped together. So we actually got our kids involved in Irish dancing. And they got really good at it pretty quickly and started winning and, you know, competing and winning. And then we went to our first festival and we got instruments and fell in love with the music and the culture. And you know, and then we moved to Nashville, and there was an Irish pub opening up on Music Row. And somebody saw us dancing. The owner saw us dancing, and he goes, hey, would you guys do something on St. Patrick's Day? I'll give you 45 minutes to do whatever you want. And that was our first gig. That was about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. And we did that gig for 8 years in a row on Music Row, and we got, quote unquote, discovered, you know, by the music industry while playing on St. Patrick's Day at this little Irish pub on Music Row. And that started the ball rolling. They started introducing us to, you know, he was a record label.
Okay.
He pitched us to his record label owner. He passed on us because he was afraid of a big family with 10 kids and signing a bunch of minors. And so, you know, we continued to be pitched around Nashville. And then that eventually led to a show on GAC, which is Great American Country, pretty much based here in Nashville. It wasn't a big time thing, okay. You know. Like, if you get your basic cable package, GAC is not in your basic cable package. So it was further than that. But then when GAC kind of was over, we decided to try for America's Got Talent. Well, then we also tried for the Today Show.
Okay.
When Carrie Underwood was doing The Sound of Music, we did a little video off the Today Show, and we won that. We won America's Most.
Yeah.
I don't know, the musical family or whatever they called it, the modern Von Trapp family or something. And then that's when we did that, and then we did America's Got Talent, and TLC saw us on America's Got Talent and reached out to us. It's kind of a long story, but really started with my husband in wrestling.
See, that's interesting. So, again, it's a situation where you had that competitive urge, or you had that thought process with a big family, what can we do to compete and do things that we enjoy and love together? And from the big family came music and came the opportunities and the success. But I think that, Brendan, we could tell you must be always on the horn before you became big time, like now with your show. But before then, just pitching and calling and calling and emailing to get these opportunities, right?
You know what? No.
Really?
Honestly, no, I wasn't. It was walking through doors of opportunity is what it was.
And
we didn't have this planned. We weren't trying to make this happen.
Okay.
It was my kids loved music. They loved meeting other kids that loved music.
Okay.
So that's why we got into the competitions, the Irish music and the Irish dancing. It was just a quality of life thing. I tell people all the time, we would be doing this whether we were making money or not. We would be doing this whether there were cameras or not. Just because it's fun, it's beautiful. They get to travel the world. They get to meet other people who enjoy music and who enjoy performing. We get to do amazing things. We just went dog sledding. We went surfing. We travel to Ireland. We do gigs in really cool places. We get to do all kinds of neat things. So, no, it wasn't that we were pushing and trying to force this to happen. We were just walking through doors of opportunity, enjoying a great quality of life. This was not the goal, to become a TV reality family that performs.
Okay.
That was
okay.
Not the goal. It was quality of life thing.
Quality of life, sharing your music, and then there it happens. So then you get pitched by TLC. TLC comes to you, or you come to TLC, whatever, and then the opportunity comes. And how does your life change after the season, especially with the ratings and how you've been doing well and stuff like that? Is it recognized everywhere?
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Honestly, you know what? It hasn't changed our life that much. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, people will stop and ask for a picture in Walmart occasionally, but that's not really that big of a deal. It hasn't changed. And that's one of the things I think that's really important is for our family to understand, and we tell them all the time, we don't want it to change our life this time. We want to continue being a family that loves each other, that takes opportunities, that does great things together, that, you know, tries to reach our potential and just share that with the world, you know. I mean, yeah, more people are getting to know us, and we do get stopped in Walmart or the airport or whatever, but I still want to be that same person. I tell you, it was very interesting. We played on the Grand Ole Opry quite a bit, and we met Keith Urban. He came backstage, and he was going to be performing that night, and he was the most kind, genuine person we've ever met, and we met a lot of wonderful people. But he got down on his knees and he shook hands with all my little tiny ones, my 5-year-old, my 6-year-old, my 8-year-old, asked their name and was genuinely interested. And my kids walked away from that going, oh my gosh, I don't know how big we're going to get, but no matter how big we get, we want to be like that.
That's great.
We want to be just as genuine and kind and you know, giving people our attention as much as we possibly can. And it was just a really good, it was a good illustration for them to see someone who was a really big deal and yet be unchanged as far as his personality and his kindness towards people. So that's definitely the goal. I don't want the life to change so much that it ruins who we are and what we want to be.
So you're not going to let TV and entertainment business do that to you, especially either music or television. And that's great. And I think that keeping them grounded, understanding that. And I've noticed a lot of reality stars have done that. Brenda, they just basically know, you know, that fans created them. They're created by the people watching every week. It's not, you know, it's not a situation where, you know, you're telling your story. And if you didn't have fans, you wouldn't have a show. Right, Brenda? So that's the thing that you guys are seeing in this process. If no one watched, you wouldn't have fans, you wouldn't have a show. Am I correct on that? That's the kind of thought process you got that lots of reality stars are able to do. Yeah.
That's definitely true, but we really enjoy what we're doing so much that even if we didn't have fans and no one wanted to watch it, we'd still be doing the same thing.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, so in one sense, what thrills us probably more than anything that there is a show is when people come up and say, that inspired me so much, or I was going through a hard time and that really helped me, or, you know, I love seeing your family do this, or your song, I've listened to it over and over because I just had surgery, or I lost my mom and your mama's song really blessed me, or that's what really thrills us, that there's fans involved in our life, is that we can inspire people. A lot of times, or Whitney, if she's listening to this, my publicist from TLC, she's going to die when I say this, but people a lot of times will say, what do you want people to take away from your show? I said, really? I want them to get off their couch, turn off their TV, and go live their own life. You know, I don't want people sitting there watching TV, watching me live mine. I want people to be inspired by what happens in my life to say, hey, I want to go out and do things with my kids. I want to go, you know, do this or that. And I want to get involved in my kids' sports life and their education, or let's take a family vacation together, or let's just go out and exercise together, whatever it is. I really want people to get up instead of just sitting there watching me. I want them to be inspired to get up and go live their own life with their own family. So that's why the fans are important to us, just so that maybe we can, in some way, inspire them to do whatever it is that they want to do.
That's tremendous. Again, March 15th, 10 p.m. Eastern, this new season begins. What surprises do you have in store? Give us a couple hints of what to expect for the show on Tuesday night.
Yeah, you know what? They really wanted to get to know us. I know there was a bit of traveling around and on the road and, you know, a bit of the hype and the chaos last season, but they really wanted to get to know everybody this season. So there's a bit more of at home and what's happening in our lives and, like, the individual personalities of each person, you know, and then crazy little things that happen in every home and how they react, like, we went away and we came back and our dog had 9 puppies. And so, you know, what my little kids with the new puppies and, you know, creating the next album, what's that going to be like? Are we going to go with this genre? Are we going to go with that genre? And changes that happen and things like that. And just kind of as a family, how we work through issues and kind of displaying each person's personality. So we're actually really excited for this season and kind of getting to know everybody and what they're going through.
So how do you guys work as a team? Especially, I need tips, especially my wife and I, with five kids, we go through this. Our oldest is 10 and our youngest is 2. So we're in that, you know, boat of craziness every day. How do you guys work as a team so that you can, when there's fights or struggles or anything, how do you guys handle it? Is there leadership, not just from your husband, but also you and other children, the oldest? How does that work so that you guys don't keep it's organized chaos, but not, you know, bad chaos. Yeah.
You know, it's really important to have strong leadership. And so it's pretty much across the board in our family that Toby's the leader. But he's also a very gracious leader. And he takes other people's opinions into account and all this and that. And, you know, as the other kids are getting older, I mean, Jess is 23, Jared's 22, Jenny's 21, Jeanette's 19, he includes them in the decision-making process. I'm very supportive of him in whatever he decides, but then he'll ask my opinion on a lot of things. So I think being on the same page as far as leadership is really important. There's a lot of delegation that happens, obviously. He doesn't handle everything, but supporting that, you know, the main leader, and then everybody being on the same page as far as the younger ones are concerned, yeah, that's really, really, really important. And then there's also teaching of responsibility, which
yes.
tends to lessen the amount of issues. When the younger ones are taught responsibility, you know, make your bed, clean your room,
yes.
you know, take care of your laundry, help with the meals, things like that, there's less chaos, and so therefore there's less problem. And so that's a big deal. A lot of people are like, man, I don't think kids, you know, have to do chores or they're too busy with school and mom's going to do it all. Well, that creates a lot of stress in the family. When there's multiple people and making messes, there has to be multiple people cleaning up messes and, you know, keeping things under control. And when the environment is clean and neat and a well-oiled machine, and I don't think that my house is always clean and that I always have a well-oiled machine that works perfectly, but that is the goal. I would for that. It definitely helps.
Now, when you talk about clean, how do you keep your house clean with this many kids? I mean, I'm always challenged. My wife and I constantly are going. How do we keep things in order? It's got to take a team, doesn't it?
Yeah, it takes a plan, and, you know, we have a schedule for school, and we change that up. It gets boring if you do the same thing all the time, so you change that up. Sometimes we do all of our athletic things in the morning, like, you know, workouts and dance practice and things like that. We have lunch, and then academics are afterwards, or sometimes we flip it. Sometimes the academics are right after breakfast, and we do all that, and then we have athletics in the afternoon, and then we have music and art and stuff in the evenings. Our school day is in three sections, from breakfast to lunch, from lunch to dinner, and from dinner to bed. And we kind of, athletics are grouped in one, and then academics, and then art and music. So we kind of go all day. Our day is quite a bit longer than a regular school kid. Of course, they come home and do homework anyway, so I guess their day is just as long. But, but we consider that all part of the day. And yet, sometimes, you know, all those things will be so much fun. Somebody will say, what did you do for school today? They're like, oh, we didn't do school today. And yet they, you know, did some fun things with, you know, the maps on the wall talking about where we're going in Ireland and what we're doing. Well, that was geography. But we just make it really fun and very life-driven, you know. So anyway, I think having a plan is number one. And then implementing and teaching them how to use the plan is the second thing. And my husband's mom, my mother-in-law, was a Montessori school teacher. And I wasn't raised that way. I didn't know anything about Montessori school. But that's a big key. Is not only making the plan and having a way to do everything, but in addition, teaching them how to do that plan and teaching them, you know, how to make your bed, how to take care of the laundry. And this is the plan. You got to run them through it, and then they get lazy, and you have to kind of redo the educational process again on how to do it. And you know what? I don't ever want anybody to think that I'm perfect at it, because I'm not. I've been learning as I go, because I wasn't raised that way. And so, you know, there's been a big learning curve. And then you always have, I mean, at least in our family up to now, you've always got little ones that are coming up and more people to teach. So, but, you know, I think that's what makes the chaos manageable. It's having a plan and then teaching everybody how to implement that plan.
That's fantastic. I know that a couple of the kids want to come on the line to say hi. If possible, we can, and I can ask a few questions if you want to put them on the line for a second before we finish the interview.
Yeah, hang on one second. I'll want to grab some of them. But so what's your listening audience like? Who's listening to us today?
Oh, we got all over the world. We're going to go pull it out on a syndication tomorrow on all over the world. So it's kind of like we're recording now and going live, and then tomorrow getting it out all over the world to different areas. London, Canada, we're looking at most of the U.S., so just say hi and specific things, and I'll ask a few questions for the kids. You can introduce them to me, and I'll ask one question or two.
Yeah, you know what? We've got Jenny and Jeanette here that can say hello. One of the things that's really cool for us is our TV show is kind of going out worldwide, and it's being aired in, like, I think it's like 150-something countries.
Wow, okay.
And so it's really kind of cool for us. Yeah, it's really kind of cool for us to be able to have that wide of a reach. When we do, like, we do fan tours to Ireland.
That's
we
great.
Had people, like, we did our fan tour last year. We had people from 6 different countries that went to and toured Ireland with us. So it's kind of cool that this is going out all over the place. I have Jenny here on the line right now.
Hey,
and,
Jenny.
You can say hi to Jenny and talk to her for a bit.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Just two major questions. One about homeschooling. How old are you, Jenny? And tell me specifically how much you've enjoyed being homeschooled.
Well, I'm 21, and I was homeschooled all the way through, and I enjoyed it so much. My mom was an education major in college, so she absolutely knew what she was doing and was extremely creative when it came to picking curriculums and stuff for us as we were homeschooling. And she really did an amazing job of tailoring the curriculum to each one of us kids. And she didn't just stick to one curriculum across the board, because different kids had different strengths and different weaknesses. So if, you know, one kid was excelling in, you know, reading but falling behind in math, she would absolutely tailor the curriculum to help, you know, that kid really catch up on their math and stuff. And it was just, I don't know, I mean, I think each of us kids have really received the best education we possibly
can. Brenda, again, we're on in Montreal, we're on in London, England, and they'll be promoting you big time, and we have all these different platforms all over the world to listen to the show and stuff, so I'm glad to have you.
Jackson is here, and Jackson's going to jump on the line real quick and talk to you.
Okay, really quickly, then we'll go and... Hey, Jackson, how are you?
I'm well.
Fantastic, Jackson. How old are you, by the way?
I am 17.
What did you think of your homeschooling experience and stuff? Have you enjoyed that? That's one of the questions I asked Jenny.
Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I still got 1 year left, and it was great because I got to learn at my own pace. And if I needed to move to another subject, my parents were fine with that. And if I was having a bad day on one subject, I could just go on to another one. And it was great to go at my own speed. And if I was excelling at something, nothing was holding me back.
I love that answer. How's your life changed since the television show, meaning the TV show now where you go and your friends are talking to you when you're in the community and traveling and things like that? And how have you handled that so far since the TV show?
Well, the biggest change, I would say, is that people now recognize me.
Yeah.
In the grocery store or something, and people want to come up and get a picture. And it's been great. It was a little weird and awkward to get used to at first, but now it's been so much fun to be able to interact with people who are fans of the family, and it's been amazing.
Well, that's fantastic, Jackson, and best of luck on the show and your performing and stuff like that. And let's hope you continue to have success in school and also performing. So I'll go ahead and grab Brenda before we finish up the show, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good talking to you.
Hey, this is Brenda.
All right, Brenda. The craziness of today, we made it through, and now I'm going to be doing some editing and then get it out through syndication and everywhere. Best place we can find information on you, Brenda, and learn more about you, where can we go?
TheWillisClan.com is the best place to find our live touring schedule and bios on everybody and information about what's happening and what's happened in the past. Try to keep that up on our blog, too. So, yeah, thewillisclan.com is the best place to find information about us.
And all your different social media stuff and all that stuff. And remember to tune in again March 15th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central to the Willis family on TLC. Thanks for calling, guys, and take care.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Neil Haley Show. Go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+. And also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program star of The Sound of Music, Ben Davis. You play Captain Von Trapp Ben, thanks for calling, and how are you?
My pleasure. How are you guys doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, Ben. And what an opportunity to play Captain Von Trapp. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it is. It's iconic in the American film history, American musical theater history. It's a great sense of responsibility and just a lot of fun.
Again, March 22nd and 27th, we'll be at the Benedum. Ben, it's just like when you think about The Sound of Music, I'm sure when you were studying theater, always you've probably seen this 1,000 times, haven't you, before starting to play this, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, the funny thing is that because I didn't start in theater till late, I was more of a jock, so I didn't even see it in its entirety until I had been cast in another production back about 4 years ago. So I kind of came at it with fresh eyes, but then, you know, everybody, whether they realize it or not, has heard the music and they've seen snippets of it here or there.
Exactly, and that's the cool thing about it for sure. And for your character, was that an interesting preparation for that character, especially when you talk about the big family and having it, that certain leadership quality that you had to play throughout this show?
I think, yeah. What you do usually what I do when I'm prepping for a show or a role is that you have to start with the script, right? You have to start with what the script gives you and try to gain insight as to who the character is through that script. And then because he was a real-life person, you can go back and you can kind of fill in some gaps with who he was in real life or who we think he was in real life. It was a lot of fun. And then the kids thing just kind of happens because you never know what kind of kids you're going to get until you're in the room and you see their personalities. And our kids bring such each of them has such a unique personality that as long as I'm open to it, they're going to give me something.
What about, you were talking about how you just learned about this a few years ago, Sound of Music, and really looked at it, studying specifically the history of this and the whole thought process of that time in history and what was happening and how we never can forget these things, right?
No. And you know, what's interesting is that the movie is different in many ways from the stage version. And I actually like the stage version better, and that's pretty, maybe a little bit biased, but I think that the movie version took out some things. I think the stage version is a lot more complex. It talks more about the political undertones of the time period. You know, this was 1938, pre-Nazi invasion Austria. And that brings a real urgency to the whole piece. And the movie is something we all know and love. But I think that the Broadway version, the musical version, has a lot to say.
It does. And it makes you think, and it brings up that time, especially with how Germany was taking over different countries, and the whole thought about the pride of the nation of Austria and how they did not want to be taken over. And that certain people were buying in on this, and I'm sure we look at economy in Europe at that time, and I'm going to buy into this person, this personality, and young people were just flocking to Adolf Hitler, and certain people were selling it. While Captain Von Trapp had nothing to do with it,
No, but doesn't that kind of sound like maybe today, too? I mean, that's the ironic thing about doing this show right now, is that there are these parallels that you can unfortunately draw, and God knows I'm not comparing anyone or anything to Hitler. I would never do that.
No, but not at all.
You can look at time periods, and you can look at circumstances and say, okay, why do these type of people come to popularity during these times? And I think that we need to learn from our history lest we repeat it.
History repeats itself for sure, and all that. So tell me about working with the cast. What did you think of it for sure? And in preparation for the singing and being involved with a lot of girls and boys, and how, working on your tone of how you're singing with your co-hosts and stuff. Tell me specifically how you put all that together.
Well, I fortunately got to be in on the last auditions for the Maria, and when Kirsten Anderson, who is our Maria, walked through the door, we just all kind of knew it. So it was nice to be able to be in that final audition and see how our chemistry was going to be, and we really got along well right from the very start. She's a young gal with an incredible amount of talent. And it's been just a joy to work with her. The rest of the cast is fantastic. We just brought in a new Mother Abbess. Our first Mother Abbess, Ashley Brown, was 7 months pregnant by the time she left. Luckily, the costumes hid that. But now we have Melody Betts, who's fantastic and brings a whole new energy to the show that she's been able to seamlessly slide in. And her voice is incredible. The audiences are going to go nuts over it. Max is played by Merwin Ford, who is a Broadway veteran of 16 Broadway shows, and he brings a ton of experience, and it's a veteran cast with a lot of youth added in, and not just in the kids. Our Maria, like I said, audiences have really responded to her freshness and her just
that's
like there's an unshowiness to it. It's just very real. It's great.
You think of the innocence of Maria at that time and how she was so naive in ways and also very wise. That's the character you think about for sure.
Well, and that's that to AT, what you just described is Kirsten. Kirsten just turned 21 in September. So she has that naivete. She has that freshness, that youthfulness, but she also is preternaturally wise. So she has these kind of both of these things working for her that just really, she is Maria. So it's a great fit for her.
And that's the thought process. And I know I'm sure once you knew you had that role, you probably went back and checked out the history. Remember how ABC covered the whole Sound of the Music anniversary for the film and everything. And at that time, did you know you had this role, or were you just kind of checking it out and saying, "No, this is interesting"?
I played the role once before. I played the role before. I had a connection with it, so I was doing that. And anytime you get to watch Christopher Plummer up there and Julie Andrews and all those people, it's a treat.
And it's a very, very interesting story of Julie Andrews and all that stuff. So the history of this, the Sound of Music, again. For Pittsburgh fans that are tuning in right now, again, March 22nd to 27th, I'll be coming Tuesday to the show, Ben, with my wife, and I cannot wait to watch it. And my kids wish that they were having tickets to this. And then some other time, I have five of my own, Ben, so it really speaks to me.
Oh my
my youngest is two. So I feel like sometimes I'm Captain Von Trapp and stuff, trying to get them in line and all that. So I feel so much when I watch
these kids. What's the secret to keeping healthy as a dad? These kids got me sick lately.
So, and all that. And I'm sure you see how amazing these kids are, right? You know, traveling the country, still having to keep up with their schoolwork and practicing and how excited they are about to be part of this.
They work harder than we do, honestly, because they have to go to school all day and then they come in and do the show. And you know, the sacrifice that their families make to allow them to come out here and do this, they have one parent or guardian that comes, so that breaks up a family. And so they make a lot of sacrifices just so these kids can have this experience. And to a kid, none of them seems to be taking it for granted. And we got really lucky with the kids that we have here.
Well, I'm excited, and I'm excited to see this and all that and the history, and then thinking about the Sound of Music, the country. Ben, where's the best place we can find info that way? Like basically for our listeners and viewers out there that are not in Pittsburgh that want to come and see what music is coming to their area, where can they find info?
I think the website is www.thesoundofmusicontour.com. Make sure you say on tour, because if you go to the Sound of Music Tour, I think you get a Salzburg thing.
And do you also have the social media as well for yourself to find info?
I do. I'm on Instagram at this Ben Davis, not any other Ben Davis. It's this Ben Davis. I am on Twitter at BJ Davis. And my website is BenjaminJDavis.com. That's BenjaminJAYDavis.com.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling. I appreciate you coming on the show. Best of luck in all the different things. And again, trust.org to find out, trustarts.org, March 22nd and 27th at the Benedum, and 412-471-6930 and 412-456-4800. Thanks for calling, Ben, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right, again, that was the Neil Haley Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn Neil Haley, Instagram Total Tutor, Pinterest Neil Haley Google Plus. And coming up, I'm the next guest, and it'll be in about a couple of minutes live again. But I'll see you next week for another exciting Neil Haley Show. A lot of fun this week. More guests coming up all the way through, and then hopefully the new website soon. I'll wait, check all that stuff out, and take care of things. And when I think about the Sound of Music, I promise you I'm not going to sing a song right now to end the show. I can't do that. My wife would not mind, but there are a lot of people who just don't know it. But I would always do all the different songs of the Sound of Music, and it was just a pleasure to talk about it, and cannot wait Tuesday to watch it. And you guys got to check all that out all over the place. So take care, guys, and we'll see you next week for another exciting Neil Haley Show.